Shout it out to my listeners out there. This is your host, Moshe Canty, host of the podcast Conscious Moves. I hope everybody out there is staying healthy, staying focused, and most importantly, staying conscious and making the conscious moves. You know, today is October 31st, 2020. And today we're going to discuss a very important topic. But before I get there, let me first say all praise is due to Allah for allowing this opportunity to be able to happen. Without him, none of this is possible. So I'm thankful that I have air in my lungs, that I'm able to enjoy all the amenities that I've been blessed with. And I don't take any of that for granted. So again, all praise is due to Allah. I want to thank my family and my friends for their continuous support, as well as the brothers behind the wall who, at this very moment, man, are dealing with their own reality outside of our reality. And their reality comes with a level of pain, turmoil, and struggle that I don't even think many of us can fathom. So again, shout it out to those brothers behind the wall, their families who support them. Keep staying strong as well. I want to shout out to brother Lakon, his wife, and the family of the home of I Am. Over this last week, this past Tuesday, in fact, on the 27th of October, they allowed me an opportunity to speak on a live Zoom call, or Zoom video in this case. And this was my first live session since being released from prison on September 8th. I spoke about a number of things, my personal journey, my upbringing, my time spent in prison, and the things that I'm doing now. So I'm very thankful for them affording me the opportunity to use my voice and allowing me to speak on their platform. I thank all of my family and loved ones who were there to support me in that endeavor. It was a beautiful experience, so I'm humbled by that. I want to shout out my brother Michael Sledge as well, his wife too, who also, you know, due to Allah's mercy, had made that happen, man. And I'm very thankful for that. It's not easy to be able to, you know, come home from prison and just jump right into it. But again, by Allah's mercy, the brother, look up, man, Michael Sledge was able to be in my life, man, and help make this process that much more easier for me. So again, thank you to him and his wife. Last week, you know, we were speaking specifically about, the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about the topic of, you know, is the disrespect of black women conscious or unconscious behavior? And that topic in particular has sparked a lot of conversation regarding our treatment or mistreatment towards one another. And one person in particular sent me a text, and I'm going to read this, and this is exactly what the question posed to me stated. He said, "Why does everyone always tell black men how to treat black women, but never tell black women how to treat black men?" And that's a great question. And I want to shout my brother out who sent that to me. Definitely want to send him a shout out. But that's a great question. And inshallah, what we're going to do is we're going to expand upon that right there, because we're not going to just narrow it down with what we know to be the mistreatment of black men upon black women. We're going to speak in particular about how black women treat black men. But that's not going to be today. We have a different topic that I want to talk about today. And that topic is dealing with, let me just say this, right? So since coming home, a lot of people have given me a pat on the back saying, "Damn, yo, Mo, man, you know, you home and you look good and you're doing your thing and all of this, right?" And while that's all fine and dandy, and I'm thankful for that, I don't take any of that for granted. I don't want anybody to misconstrue or forget that I spent 22 years incarcerated, 15 of which was spent in segregated housing, meaning I was locked up for a day, every single day, for 23 hours a day in a cell, where I only was allowed to go outside that cell for 1 hour for recreational activities. All right? I don't want anybody to just somehow underlook that or overlook that and think that that's just nothing or that Moshe has it all figured out because, you know, I'm giving you the impression that everything's all right. That's not the case. I'm doing all right. I'm thankful to have my freedom. I pray to Allah 5 times a day. I am appreciative of everything that I have now. And without the mercy of Allah, I wouldn't have it. But to simply negate and to overlook what I had to endure to get to where I'm at will be a disservice to myself and to the community at large. So I use this platform as a way not only to educate the public about my personal journey, about topics that are affecting us all, not only in the community, in our families, in society, and in the world in general. But again, I would be doing ourselves a disservice if I didn't keep it all the way 100. So I don't want to neglect to provide critical information that could be of usage for somebody who else who may be struggling with the issues that they may be struggling with. And one of the biggest issues that is not getting enough attention in the community is the issue of mental health, of mental illness. And many of us are suffering from this. Many of us have backgrounds or incidents that took place in our respective past that have not been addressed. And throughout the course of our journeys, they rear their ugly heads when triggered. So each of us has triggers that if we've had issues that were not properly addressed, when they do rear their ugly head, many of us don't know how to deal with that. Many of us are not seeking the help that we know we should be seeking until it's too late. So everybody has come to me and given me hugs and pats on my back and said, "Yo, Mo, man, you looking great, man. But has anybody questioned my mental stability? Has anybody asked themselves, damn, man, is Mo doing all right up top? He got a little bit of his weight look up like he doing some push-ups. He running and all that. But what's going on with Mo, man? How was he doing, man, after spending 22 years locked up in that cage?" These are some of the questions that we should be asking ourselves, because when we don't ask ourselves these questions, we put ourselves all at a disadvantage. So I don't want to deceive anybody into thinking that everything is all right. Just because somebody looks a certain way does not indicate that they are not suffering from a mental illness. This is what many of us try to do. We do a wonderful job of concealing our true identities. But let me tell you guys something. You never know what can trigger unstable mental condition. An unstable mental condition can be triggered by a number of things. So for me, with respect to my personal journey, I'm going to share with you guys just something in regards to at what point I knew I needed some help. Right. So for me, right, I'm incarcerated. This is 1999 and I'm on Rikers Island at the time. I'm in OBCC, which at the time was we used to call it the pound. So I'm in this, and this is the Bing. I'm locked down for 23 hours a day. And I never forget the date. It was February 9th, 1999. And I saw the officer walk by the cell. And he looked in the cell that I occupied and he said to me, first he looked in there and he gave me the impression that he wanted to tell me something, but thought against it because, you know, certain individuals have reputations for being a hothead. I was one of them. So I guess he didn't want to be the one to be the bearer of bad news. But he came to me, he said, "Yo, Canty, they want to see you down there in social services." Now, social services was a part of the prison where individuals who were like counselors, correction counselors, would do their best to try to counsel individual prisoners that had enough, that were dealing with obviously a number of issues. So when he said this to me, I knew already from experience that if anybody down there wants to speak to you, I'm not on their file. I don't go see a psychiatrist. I don't have to, you know, I'm not going through that process. I don't, that's not my thing. I knew something wasn't right. This was a trigger for me. So in most cases, from experience, when anybody is getting called down there, more than likely, this is a red flag that somebody close to you has passed away. So for me, I just was preparing myself for the worst. I didn't know what to expect. So they handcuffed me. I get downstairs. They then take the handcuffs off of my hand. And my left hand is then placed near a bar that allows the loop from the handcuff to be placed on there. So I got my handcuff, my left arm or wrist in this case, handcuffed to like this apparatus. So I sit down in the chair. I never forget this lady's name. Her name was Miss Diamond. She says to me, "Moshe, I have some news to convey to you. Your sister was killed." So I went completely, like, in that moment, I dropped to the floor and just kind of, like, just broke down and went crazy. So it was like everything just got dark for me. And I was crying like I never cried before. I mean, I was letting out some serious hardcore screams and all this stuff that was inside of me. It was too hard to bear. So I'm trying to grab and throw everything that's in my possession. I'm trying to rip my arm out of the socket to get out of that cuff, but they just let me do it. I can't do it. I'm actually causing more physical harm than anything. So they just let me ball out and do what I got to do to get it all out of me. But I didn't even know, because she said that my sister was killed, but she didn't specify, you know, she didn't get specific. So I didn't know, I didn't know what the circumstances were. So, you know, at the time, you know, my sister, prior to getting locked up, and even during my time of getting locked up, my sister was in an abusive relationship with this clown who used to put his hands on her. So the first thought that came to my head was that this guy killed my sister. So that really hurt me. But I said, first, let me find out what the specifics are regarding this so that I don't just, you know, assume anything incorrectly. So I asked her, "Can I call my mother?" And she said, "Yeah." So I went to call my mother and she saw me dialing the 718 number. She was like, "No. This is your mother in Yonkers." So I called my mother, my father's wife at the time, and I gets on the phone and she said to me, "Moshe, she referred to me as my name Moses, that everybody knows me." She said, "Moses, Ishana was killed in a car accident. Ishana, my sister, was killed in a car accident." So I couldn't take it anymore, man. I couldn't take it. I just was just done. Cause my thing at that time was like, how could my sister die? How could she die? This is my best friend, somebody who I've known my whole life, somebody who's always been in my corner, somebody who I thought that I would grow old with, somebody who, to me, you know, at that point, I felt didn't deserve to die. You know, here I was in the streets. I was doing all the other stuff. And yet I'm still alive. I'm still breathing. How could I still be alive, but yet my sister be gone? So in that moment, I would have done everything to trade places with her. And so that was my thought pattern at that time. You know, I found out that at the time, my nephew, my sister's son, he was all right. Everything was good. So I wasn't in a good mental space right there. So a decision was made. Not to send me back to 23-hour lockdown, but to send me to a dorm house where it's a more open space. It's more spacious, but the beds are like juxtaposed or placed right next to each other, which means that you're not locked in to a cell. And it was there I was placed in a what's known as a mental unit with other individuals who were dealing with their own personal issues. Now, some individuals, I assume, were using this as a way so they wouldn't have to deal with the hardships of prison, while other individuals, rightfully so, needed the mental health that they needed. But during this process, I was really, really going through it. I couldn't get no sleep. I was up all night crying all day. I'm seeing people walk around and talking to themselves and individuals. I was in a real, it was like a mental asylum. That's where I was at. They placed me there, but I was able to walk around. And I remember being there and being in a fog and just like, yo, man, like feeling at the bottom. I let myself down. I let my family down. I let everybody down. I let my sister down. Like, I didn't even get a chance to speak to my sister because her phone was disconnected at the time. And, you know, it was just a real difficult thing for me to deal with. So it was like, damn, I didn't even get an opportunity to tell my sister I love her. Last time I spoke to her was about 4 months, you know, from that moment. And I wasn't able to kind of like, you know, figure out where her head was at. And my, you know, prior to my incarceration, my sister and I spoke every day of our lives. It was never a time we didn't speak. So this was hard for me to deal with, really, really hard for me to deal with, knowing how close-knit my family is and just feeling as if I let everybody down. So the pain became too overbearing. I wasn't getting any sleep. But again, Allah is the most merciful. You know, one of his names is Ar-Rahman, and that means that he is merciful to his creation, even when his creation does not even realize how merciful he is. So at that time, it was an officer there in the building who lived around my way, whose name I won't say for obvious reasons. This was a beautiful soul, man. And I'm thankful that she was there because, you know, she knew my sister. We all were raised in the same neighborhood together, and she and my sister were in the same age group. So it was as if she was like my elder sister, my bigger sister. And through by Allah's mercy, when she, being from the neighborhood, found out the news, she tracked me down and she knew exactly what house I was in. And she came to the house and she sat with me and she talked to me and she made sure I was all right. She gave me all the amenities, the extra amenities that I wasn't even supposed to be getting because she knew I was struggling. She knew I was going through it. But I knew at some point that I would have to leave this mental unit and that they would have to eventually send me back to the 23-hour lockdown. And I couldn't deal with it. You know, they had to suit up. The squad had to come. We used to call them back in the days, the Ninja Turtles. And I told them I wasn't going back to no 23-hour lockdown. You had to take me by force. And that's exactly what ended up being a thing until this individual came to me and talked me out of it and was like, yo, Moshe, you can't do this, man. This is only going to make it worse for you. So I'm thankful for that. I didn't have to get stupid on that particular day. But going back to that cell was the worst experience of my life. See, a lot of people don't get it. They think that just going to prison is like, I don't know, a badge of honor. When you're young, you have this invincible way of thinking. You think that, you know, I'll be all right. But nah, it's not all right. Everything is not all right. You're going through some real life struggles. Life is moving on. Your family is going through a whole host of issues. And in your absence, they're moving on. But where you should be with your family during these moments, you sitting in somebody's prison. And this was the hardest thing for me to deal with. So when they put me back in that cell, I didn't realize how vulnerable I felt in that moment. Because when that gate closed, it ain't nobody, you know, you ain't getting no help from nobody. No matter who your name is, what your reputation is, how much work you put in on the streets, how much money you got in that moment. In that moment right now, you in that cell, you by yourself. You got to deal with yourself, and that's the only thing you got to deal with. How are you going to deal with yourself? And at that moment, for the first time in my life, I thought about killing myself. People don't even know that about me. This is the first time in my life the first and only time I thought about committing suicide. Yeah, real talk. I was in that moment of feeling vulnerable, of feeling weak, of feeling like I ain't even want to be here no more. So I began thinking about ways I can kill myself. The obvious way be to just put a sheet around my neck and hang myself. Another way, I could just jump off the bed and just hit my head on the table. All type of stuff I thought about doing. I actually thought about ways in which I can kill myself. And I can only imagine so many others who also face with them same or similar circumstances, if not worse, who contemplate doing the same thing. But the problem with that is that in many instances, many people don't get the help that they need. By the mercy of Allah, I'm still here, so obviously I didn't follow through on my thoughts. But one thing I did think about was my mother. I said, damn, how can my mother be out there right now raising my nephew, in this case, my sister's son, by herself? I'm not there. So now she has to do everything on her own. All right. So that's what hurt the most, too, because it was like, damn, I'm the youngest of my mother's child. My mother's children. But yet I'm the only boy from her womb. So here it is that my mother needs me in this most critical time to be as this supportive young man that I should be doing, to be there with my family, and yet I'm not there. And that's a thought that kept ringing in my head. I said, your mother needs you here. If your sister passed away tragically, untimely, and then now you didn't follow that up with a suicide, your mother will freaking go crazy. So I would like to think that by Allah's mercy, he used those visions of my mother in my head not to allow me to commit the most stupidest act. I don't know, man. That probably would have been crazy for me, man. So you never know what moments or what incidents put you in a situation where you might contemplate. So don't get the impression, Moshe, oh, Mo look good. Mo this big. Oh, he came home. Yeah, Mo look all right. But Mo went through a struggle. Mo went through some real pain in there. Emotionally, psychologically, it was pain. It wasn't no joke. It wasn't a game. So what y'all don't know about is that I used to jump out my sleep in the aftermath of my sister's death. I mean, literally jumping out my sleep, waking up 2-3 in the morning, not getting no sleep, walking around the cell, like literally not knowing what to do, how to do it. The anxiety, the stress that's associated with that, I can't even describe it. All right? I wasn't getting no sleep. I was not happy. And there was no one there to comfort me. No one there to help me cope with the reality of losing such a loved one. So to a large extent, I still haven't addressed that issue of my sister passing away and me having to deal with it under those circumstances. No, there was no grief counselor that can really help me deal with the issues of that moment. So what I did was simply suppress that. I dealt with it because we have no other choice but to deal with it under those circumstances. And I dealt with it. But let me tell you something. It was the hardest and it is the hardest thing to deal with. Even now, I get very emotional when talking about my sister. People show me photos. I still break down, start crying. People talk about her. I just start crying uncontrollably. So it's a trigger for me. All right. So I don't want anybody to get the impression that, you know, Mo is somehow above reproach, as if I got it all figured out because you hear me on the podcast giving advice and things like that. I do this because it's therapeutic. It's not a game for me. This is a serious topic. Mental health and suicide in the community and in society is some serious stuff. So I don't want anybody to ever think that. I don't want anybody to ever think that I'm superhuman. Nah, I'm just like everybody else. I got issues just like everybody else. I don't have a problem with expressing them, because by doing so, maybe by expressing them, then you people out there, all right, can also look at yourselves and say, damn, if Moshe's able to do this publicly, then maybe this will give me the heart to be able to deal with my issues as well. And if you're dealing with similar issues, this will somehow, you know, potentially give you the courage to go seek the help that you know you need help with. All right. So with that being the case, right, I dealt with these issues for a long time, and it wasn't a joke. So, but when you in them streets, the irony is that you don't foresee all of these things happening to you. You don't see that. That's not on your radar. You think you have a plan, you're trying to execute it, and you moving your pieces and you thinking, oh, all right, well, everything is going to be all right until them knockers come, the popo come knocking at your door. And they throwing them cuffs up on you, talking about they're going to give you 30, 50, 100 years. And that's exactly the story of most of individuals who spent time or who are spending time right now in prison. A lot of individuals who I've spoke to that's up north right now, nobody want to be there. But everybody had a plan. And everybody thought they knew the way to go about executing that plan. So yeah, you're out there right now. It's looking good. Or it appears to be. But you don't know what type of individual you are until you face with that situation. When you up in that predicament and you don't know how you're going to respond to that predicament. When I got locked up, I was 21 years old. I came out, I was shy of my 43rd birthday. So that means I spent 22 years in prison, man. Look at how much I missed. I missed all of my family's maturation, etc., 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 etc. Just a couple of weeks ago, I had a fortunate opportunity of meeting one of my nephews for the first time physically. A niece I haven't seen since my sister's wake. I'm connecting with family members who, while they may know me, they've never had the opportunity of meeting me physically. So this is what making unconscious moves does. It puts you in a situation in which it brings about unintended consequences that you can't even imagine. You can't even fathom because you're so caught up. Somebody asked me the other day on my live session on Tuesday night, if I was speaking to the youth today, what would I say to them? How would I try to, you know, encourage them to do the right thing? I'm going to just keep it 100 as I stated then. I would simply say this. You have a choice. You might not know what that choice, you might not know the weight of that choice, but you do have a choice. So I'm speaking to them right now. You have a choice to make. What you do with that choice is critical to your success or your demise. But at the very least, you can make the choice not to adhere to anything I'm saying to you. But you have that choice. As long as you know you have that choice, then I've done my job. I've given you the opportunity of seeing whether or not if you understood that you have that choice. And that's the best thing that we can potentially do. And that's what I basically stated that I would do. I wouldn't try to be the guy screaming and yelling at them. And I found that to be very insufficient. I would simply say, you have a choice. For me, I had a choice. But again, I did not foresee all of the experiences of losing loved ones that my family had to endure with me being incarcerated. It was a continuing process of pain and turmoil and pain and turmoil and pain and turmoil that I had to endure. Life is like, to use an analogy, when we see a mother giving birth to a child. In many instances, a mother is pushing this baby out, and it's a very painful process. A mother might be in labor. We know some stories, mothers in labor for 10 hours, 15, 24, some for a day or two. It's just, this is what's happening with that process. It's a very stressful process on a woman's body, on her emotions. It's a lot going on in that moment, but the moment is very painful. Those labor pains are very serious. Even pushing that baby out. Now, obviously, I don't know how that process feels, but I never had a woman say to me, oh, it's just like using the bathroom, man. You go to the bathroom, boop, and it's over. No, I've never had any woman tell me that. Oh, no, that it hurts. And to use that analogy, that's how our lives are. That's a giving birth is a prelude. A woman giving birth in this case is a prelude to how our lives are. And what I mean by that is that there's not going to be anything easy in our life. It's going to be a struggle. But we should not be striving to put ourselves in precarious situations like I did with myself to make our lives that much more harder. We understand that life is difficult. Life is going to be difficult. But we should be doing everything in our power to strive to the best of our abilities to make the best decisions that we possibly can. And if in the process of us making these decisions, life becomes so difficult. Mentally, we might not be there. We might need the help that we know we desperately need. Then we should seek the help that we need. Don't allow, or we shouldn't in this case, I know it's easier said than done, the hardships of life to become so burdensome, so overwhelming that they inundate you they inundate you to the point that you just want to give in and give up. Again, I know that's easier said than done because we all are faced with separate struggles. We all embrace struggles differently. All right. With respect to the loss of my sister, I was strong, but then I was weak. I became strong again, but I was vulnerable and I wanted to give up in that moment. I did. I became weak. And I want people to understand that in those moments right there, if you feel that way, then you should immediately seek the help that you need. Don't suppress and continue to suppress and continue to suppress those feelings. Because by doing so, those feelings will continue to build and build and build. Or what happens is that they become deeper, submerged inside of you, and they build up. They build up. They build up. And then to the point where you can't control yourself, they have the potential to where they explode and you lose control. I've seen many examples of individuals who I thought I've known or I thought I knew step inside those prison walls with me. Some individuals who we came in as adolescents in the Ford building. Young, strong, intelligent. 15, 20 years after spending time in prison, they're not the same individuals no more. When you look at them, they don't even recognize you anymore. They have gone through a metamorphosis, a process of change that has totally changed them. And now they look like a total different person. They're not getting the help that they need, especially on the inside. Because on the inside, within the institutions, the prison institution, the individuals can care less about whether or not you're losing your mind or not. So there's no sincere effort to try to help you become a better individual because you are seriously in need of some help. So this is why you have so many individuals who are trying to kill themselves in prison because they're not getting the help that they need. And this is why you have a lot of that happening out here in society as well. This is a very serious topic. I felt like I needed to address this issue because, one, a lot of us are not getting the help that we need. I know that I need to talk to somebody. I still have not sat down and talked to somebody regarding the things that I've seen, the things that I've endured. And I know I should. And eventually, inshallah, I will. So this episode is about us coming to terms with the issues that we know we need to address overall. This is why I titled it My Personal Struggle to Attain Consciousness. Excuse me. My Personal Struggle to Attain Consciousness. Because in spite of me telling you, yo, conscious moves this, conscious moves that, conscious moves that, there was a struggle that came along with that process. You may not have known what that struggle was, But I do. I had to wrestle and struggle with the part of Moshe that was bringing me down, that was tearing me down, that was weakening who I was. And by Allah's mercy, I was able to regain control over who I am or the person that I know I am. Not all of us are able to do that. So we got to wrestle with ourselves. We do. But the truth is that not all of us are strong like that. And we have to accept that. We have to support that like that. We can't disregard that. We can't negate that fact. We shouldn't disregard that, nor look over that fact. That everybody is just not strong enough to deal with the hardships that accompany the process of life. And with that being the case, we should do everything in our power to support each other. In the Black community in particular, mental health is frowned upon. We say things like, oh, that ninja over there, he crazy. Notice I use ninja. Oh, he crazy. Oh, she crazy. Oh, this person is that. Oh, that person is a bug out. Without simply saying that this person is dealing with a level of stress. And we need to support that person to the best of our ability. And society is like that as well. There are certain stigmas that are associated with the term of someone being crazy. But the truth is that people need help. What makes individuals crazy? There are a number of factors that we could speak about to help highlight this point. But let me tell you a much sinister thing that's happening right now, which I'm afraid of, which may happen. Because many individuals on the inside are not getting the help that they desperately need, we may see an influx of individuals being released back into society who, because they were not their mental health issues were not properly addressed, may then now bring their issues home to their families. And this may have unintended consequences as well. I know of a story of an individual who said to me, "Yo, Mo, I almost killed my only son." He said to me, one day he was in his home, and his wife gave his son or admonished his son for not doing his chores, and his son verbally lashed out at his mother. He said, the anger he had from that, he jumped up and almost choked his son to death. He said, he thought that his son, this is what he said to me, he thought that his son was somebody in jail being disrespectful to him. And had it not been for his wife, who didn't crash him over the head with a glass vase to wake him up out of this murderous rage that he was in, he'd have more than likely killed his own child. But he told me this later on. But I use that story to simply say, if we're not addressing the issue, because he told me that, "Yo, Mo, I need help. I went home my last bit and I was crazy. Everybody was suspecting me. I was walking around." I said, if you brought that mentality home with you, imagine a bunch of individuals with this mentality who are not getting the help that they so desperately need, but who are worse coming back home to our communities and then now being triggered with, or something triggers their anger or their mental conditions or their mental abnormalities, and then now they respond in a certain way. I know of women who are in relationships with men who are so abusive to them, or who have been so abusive to them, because of the fact of individuals dealing with issues that were not addressed in their childhood. When children are forced to see their own mothers abused, their fathers abusing their mothers, or their family members abusing drugs, or women, unfortunately, and young boys being who were sexually abused, and then now have to grow up with these feelings in their inside of them because they haven't been properly addressed. But what I noticed also from spending time in prison is that individuals are dealing with a plethora of issues like this. I've had individuals confess to me who you would think are the most, you would never know until they sit down and talk to you and tell you about how they were sexually abused as kids. Never know. They're not homosexuals. They are heterosexuals. They are walking around. They're married men. And they just want to share with you a personal story about what happened to them when they were 6 years old by an older cousin or older god brother and so on and so forth. How many of us have similar stories in our lives that we've suppressed, that we have not sought the necessary help for? So our community, society as a whole, is dealing with so much problems. And then we want to know, we ask the questions, well, what's going on? What's going on is that we are sick and we need help. But many of us are not getting the help that we rightfully deserve. So this podcast is just a way for us to, in some way, take heed or just hear the wisdom that is being disseminated, conveyed across the airwaves, so to speak, in hopes that maybe individuals will begin the process of addressing the ills that's impacting us all, that's affecting us all. This is what the intention of this podcast is about. So we have some work to do. And I'm going to start with myself. So inshallah, I'm going to begin the process of addressing the issues that I know that I need help with on my personal journey that have, you know, contributed to who I am today, but those issues that sit deep within my heart that I know I need help with, that I need to sit down and talk to somebody with as well. So I look forward to that next part of my journey. I had a conversation with a friend over these last couple of days who I have not seen in some time, and she was telling me about how she was in the relationship with an individual who just beats her up all the time. Who, at, you know, when they were in a relationship, beating her up, man. And then she told me about his childhood. And I was just sitting there saying, I said, damn, man, you know, I hope that there are others who are able to escape from being in those type of scenarios, but who are not allowing those scenarios and situations to beat them up to the point where, not literally, you know, please forgive me, to the extent that it's hindering them, all right, and hindering others. Because she spoke to me about this happening and this person having this mentality and how, you know, he locks his son away in the room and he puts him on punishment and he keeps him there and he does stuff to him that was done to him, or he done stuff to his son that was done to him. But it's abusive. She said that, you know, this type of stuff is abusive. And, you know, this lady has had her face bitten. You know, I'm looking at the pictures. I'm like, I can't even understand how this is happening, but it's happening. So I just want to bring these things to our attention, man, you know, just to hopefully raise the consciousness and awareness of the community as a whole. I want to speak to everybody out there in hopes that my words can somehow help us deal with our personal struggles so that ultimately we can attain individual and collective consciousness. I'm not trying to preach to anybody. I just want you guys to take trying to better yourself seriously. And with that being the case, I'm going to leave y'all with that. I hope that it's something that I said could be of benefit to you, could be of benefit to us all. I hope it can help us in our personal journeys. I'm sure that it can. Again, if you're out there struggling, man, please seek the help that you need. I'm going to close out by saying the conscious mind makes the best moves. And what that means is, by making the best moves, this puts you at a more advantage of taking advantage of whatever opportunities you're confronted with. We know that that's not always easy. So I simply say, when you're moving forward, just strive to do so to the best of your ability. To my loved ones out there again, man, y'all take care of yourselves. Everybody stay focused out there. Stay healthy. Stay conscious. Assalamu alaikum. Shut it out, y'all. This is Moshe Canty, host of the podcast Conscious Moves. This segment is sponsored by Mighty Healthy. Listen, one of the best conscious moves that you can make is to invest in your physical health. Mighty Healthy will help you do just that. It strengthens your immune system, improves digestion, reduces inflammation due to its high concentration of antioxidants, and replenishes your body with the essential vitamins and minerals it needs daily. Go to MightyHealthy.com, and to get 20% off of your purchasing price, type in the code CONSCIOUS. Tell them that Moshe sent you.